Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You know, Chinese President Xi Jinping's brokering of detente between Saudi Arabia and Iran this year leaves China as the most significant player in the Middle East. Saudi and Iranian oil will help fuel the Chinese economy, and ending the feud between the two countries benefits China economically and militarily. China is Saudi Arabia's top buyer when it comes to oil, and it's also Iran's number one customer. The U.S. and Israel come out as the biggest losers in this deal. This is the result of our president's alienation of the Saudis. Wow. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, I haven't heard anything about you getting in trouble lately. Have you been behaving yourself?
Well, I haven't been caught. I've been very careful, Colonel. I have been watching my oldest daughter's 8 children. The oldest is 12. As she gives birth to her 9th child, my 19th grandchild, all total. And I got to tell you, it's easier commanding a squad of Marines than it is 8 children, ages 1 through 12. Because the Marines, they obey a lot better.
You know, I believe that. And I'm glad you are having that experience, not me. But what a blessing to have such good grandkids. That's got to be fantastic.
It is, Colonel.
Well, here's what we have for you today. A news and comments by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss how we're dealing with China. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. You know, is climate change a real issue? We're going to discuss that with Steve Gorham, the Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. Then Navy vet Mark Liebman will discuss his latest book and some things that Americans should know about our nation, but many don't. And we'll join World War II vet Al Johnson to celebrate his 100th birthday and discuss his book.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Just send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or my Facebook. Hey, it's time now for news and comment by the Colonel on the front lines of freedom. And of course, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, the Supreme Court recently decided that our nation's service academies can continue to use race-based admissions criteria. All other colleges and universities are forbidden to do so.
Okay, as I see it, race-based admissions seek to be both fair and politically correct. However, I thought our military's goal was to be lethal and combat ready. Indeed, we have several very serious military threats to our nation right now, and we're still playing these games, and other colleges may not do so? We need someone with some common sense in charge here.
And 2 days before the 4th of July, the Biden administration's woke Department of Defense celebrated a male U.S. Army major who has decided he is female, declaring the man's journey inspires us all. Major Rachel Jones, a biological man who identifies as a woman, serves as the U.S. Army Sustainment Command Cyber Division Chief, G6 Information Management, according to our Army, which lauded Jones for living her truth. Quote, her journey from battling depression and suicidal thoughts to embracing authenticity inspires us all, the Department of Defense tweeted.
I know nothing about Major Jones, but I know absolutely no one in our military who is inspired by his transition, except maybe the jerks we have now running our military in the Pentagon. I'm sure there was a lot of surgery and psychological counseling that's gone into this transition. And that kind of commitment of time and money is not what our military should be about.
Our customs and border protection personnel have intercepted an increasing number of foreign nationals from countries not in the Western Hemisphere. Many are from Russia, and a significant number are from China. Texas Congressman Pfluger pointed out that so far this year, over 9,711 People's Republic of China nationals have been encountered by our border patrol along our southwest border, exponentially more than the previous 3 years. He was concerned that the chaos of the southwest border could be taken advantage of by anti-U.S. regimes.
I think it's safe to say that nations hostile to us are currently taking advantage of our southern border disaster. The congressman pointed out that this year, over 9,711 communist Chinese have entered our nation illegally, but that's only counting the ones we know about. Our nation is, in fact, being invaded, and our federal government doesn't seem to care at all.
Last week, Israel launched its most intense military operation in the occupied West Bank in nearly two decades, carrying out a series of drone strikes and sending hundreds of troops on an open-ended mission into a militant stronghold. The crackdown came at a time of growing domestic pressure for a tough response to recent attacks on Israeli settlers, including a shooting last month that killed four Israelis. The operation took place in the Jenin refugee camp, an area in the northern West Bank that has long been known as a bastion of militants. The fighting, which began shortly after midnight, continued past nightfall.
It is certainly reasonable for Israel to attack groups of terrorists that attack civilians, schools, hospitals, and other non-military targets. Israel is vulnerable to terrorist attacks every day, and most nations, including our current administration, don't care. They're critical of Israel, the only democracy in the entire area. Fight on, Israel.
And a Russian commander who fought against Ukraine since the war's inception has been killed in action in the Donbas region. Yevgeny Pisarenko, commander of the Chechen armed formation known as Akhmat, was pronounced dead on Monday by two fellow soldiers. He went by the nickname Big, which also translates to the Great in a Russian context. Pisarenko served as part of Russian President Vladimir Putin's special military operation that commenced February 24, 2022, and has led to countless deaths for both sides in the eastern portion of Ukraine.
It seems that the Ukrainian military is still fighting hard despite Russia's military challenges. Good job, Ukraine.
If you're a filmmaker and you want the Pentagon's help, from now on, you'll have to guarantee that you won't let China censor your movie first. Our Defense Department updated its rules for working with movie studios to prohibit any assistance to directors who plan to comply or will likely comply with censorship demands from the Chinese government in order to distribute their movie there. The issue came to a head with last year's release of Top Gun Maverick. In trailers for the film, viewers noticed that the studio removed the flags of Taiwan and Japan from Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell's flight jacket in an apparent attempt to appease Chinese investor Tencent. But after criticism in the U.S. and after Tencent reportedly dropped its investment in the film, the flags were restored in the final version. The Pentagon updated its rules for working with filmmakers after Senator Ted Cruz inserted language into the fiscal 2023 defense policy bill. Cruz has pushed back on Beijing's censorship of films. Quote, "What does it say to the world when Maverick is scared of the Chinese communist?" he said in a floor speech at the time. According to a new Defense Department document, filmmakers who want our military to help with their projects must now pledge that they won't let Beijing alter those films.
I totally support this new standard of standing up to China. Thank you, Senator Cruz, for fighting this battle for us.
And satellite images showed what appeared to be a newly built military-style camp in Belarus, with statements from a Belarusian guerrilla group and officials suggesting it may be used to house fighters from the Wagner mercenary group. Wagner chief Prigozhin and his fighters escaped prosecution and were offered refuge in Belarus after Minsk helped broker a deal to end what appeared to be an armed insurrection by the mercenary group. The abortive revolt saw Wagner troops who had fought alongside Russian forces in Ukraine capture a military headquarters in southern Russia and march towards Moscow, seemingly unimpeded. Belarus authoritarian president said his country, a close and dependent ally of Moscow, could use Wagner's experience and expertise and announced that he had offered the fighters an abandoned military unit to set up camp.
This makes sense. I guess we'll wait and see what happens in the long term. This is amazing. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll discuss the climate with Steve Gorham from the Climate Science Coalition.
fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 80% of rape victims knew their attacker. Be careful who you let into your life. If they don't feel right to you, then don't associate with them. My experience has taught me this. When you let crazy people into your life gets crazy. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. The Biden administration stated on 12 June that the existence of a Chinese spy base in Cuba isn't a recent development and dates to, yes, President Trump's term. John Kirby, a spokesman for the National Security Council, confirmed that the Biden administration is aware of China's intelligence collecting capabilities in Cuba and is taking them seriously. Further, this is not a new development that China's been trying to achieve some intelligence gathering capabilities in Cuba and, frankly, elsewhere in the hemisphere, and that from day one, when we came in, we took this issue seriously. Okay. Previously, both the White House and the Pentagon denied claims that China had struck a secret agreement with Cuba recently to build a spy base, which was first reported by the Wall Street Journal. That report cited anonymous sources who said Beijing had agreed to pay Cuba billions of dollars to build a spy base in our backyard. Kirby claimed the report wasn't accurate, but didn't elaborate on what was incorrect. Okay, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Trump administration hadn't done enough to prevent Chinese ambitions to increase overseas intelligence gathering. Blinken said China upgraded its Cuba intelligence collection agencies in 2019 when Trump was president. The Biden White House offered conflicting responses to the Wall Street Journal report, causing confusion. Kirby said that the White House couldn't get into more detail because of the sensitive nature of the information. Kirby said the original reporting, as we said, was inaccurate, and we did the best we could at the moment to be as forthcoming as we could. It's shameful that somebody or somebodies somehow think it's okay to put this kind of information into the public bloodstream. The fact that we came out a couple of days later and provided some clarifying information does not mean and should not be taken as I've seen some press reporting, some kind of walk back. Kirby also said the Biden administration has taken steps to try to mitigate the risks caused by Beijing's activities. Quote, we're confident that we can continue to protect our nation's secrets in this hemisphere and beyond, and that we can continue to defend our country appropriately, he said. Hey, while I agree with much of what Mr. Kirby said, it is inappropriate to expect any government to have full reports out that they can put out instantly to keep the media happy. And of course, they're taking this Chinese threat seriously. That said, everyone in the Biden administration who has addressed this issue has blamed everything on Trump. How can we forget that they blamed Trump for the disaster abandonment of Afghanistan and the overflight of the nation by the Chinese balloon? When no one takes responsibility for anything that went wrong, and it's always blamed elsewhere, that's a sign of lack of integrity. Okay, here's the other side of the issue. Former President Trump said his administration was not owned by Communist China like many of his predecessors. Quote, they owned us. Until I came along, they owned just every president, including presidents I like, Trump said about China in a Fox News interview. The former president pointed to his record of slapping tariffs on hundreds of billions worth of Chinese goods and having China sign a trade deal in 2020. If elected president in 2024, Trump said he would have maintained the China tariffs. Quote, I would have kept the China tariffs on, Trump said. Absolutely. It's a tremendous power thing. Unlike his predecessors who pursued a policy of engagement with China, Trump decided to confront the Chinese Communist Party head on, pushing back against its malign and hostile behaviors. Trump began hitting China with tariffs after a U.S. Trade Representative investigation in 2018 found that the communist regime was engaged in illegal practices, including excessive government subsidies and intellectual property theft. Beijing retaliated by slapping tariffs on our goods before the two sides signed a trade deal in January of 2020. The Trump administration also thwarted China's 5G ambitions as the U.S. and many other countries decided not to use equipment made by the Chinese telecom Huawei over security concerns. Meanwhile, security and privacy concerns surrounded Chinese apps such as TikTok and WeChat, as they started to be made headlines in the U.S. when Trump was president. Trump's State Department was the first to sanction a Chinese official over his involvement in gross human rights violation against Falun Gong practitioners in China and designated the communist Chinese regression of Uyghurs as genocide. The Biden administration has agreed with the designation and sanctioned a second Chinese official for persecuting the Falun Gong. It should be clear to everyone that Trump dealt more strongly with China than any former president has ever done, at least since World War II. Trump's team certainly has done much, much, much more than the Biden team ever dreamed of. Indeed, the Biden team took down some of his efforts. All this being said, China has been working for decades to build relationships with other nations, especially third world nations. They have relationships that allow their naval ships to visit and even remain in foreign ports. Hey, we do too. It's hardly surprising that they would approach Cuba. Would they have been successful had Trump had been president and threatened more economic sanctions? Who knows? What is clear is that China is a huge threat to the security of our nation. We need to start making the products we used to make here, but allow the manufacturing to move to China. A final thought. If you decide to buy an electric car, a huge amount of the metals needed for the battery come from, China. And we cannot simply forget that the Biden family has substantial economic relationships with China. As awkward as it is to say this, it's undeniably true and very likely plays a role in how we tolerate China. Let's get communist China out of our nation. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. And now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Since 2014, Congress has stopped the Air Force from retiring the A-10s at least five times. But that may now be changing. The House version of the Fiscal 2024 National Defense Authorization Act would allow the Air Force to retire 42 of the A-10s, but would pause any further cuts to the fleet until the Air Force can tell Congress how it plans to keep air crews proficient and close air support by using other aircraft. Now, the Air Force does have other aircraft that can fly close air support missions, such as the F-16, the F-15, even the F-35. In fact, AC-130 gunship and the B-1 bomber can also be used. Precision-guided weapons allow all Air Force combat aircraft to conduct close air support missions by assisting troops on the ground. The Air Force has been saying that the F-35 can replace the A-10 in providing that close air support. However, they're going to have to do it in a much different way. You know, the A-10 was designed to be low, slow, and close to targets it was engaging. The F-35's much faster, burn way more fuel, and just plain will have to engage differently. But the Air Force is still going ahead full speed by retiring the A-10s. They recently announced that they're replacing all the A-10s at Moody Air Force Base in Georgia and Gowan Field Air National Guard Base in Idaho with F-35s and F-16s. What I don't understand is that the Air Force is not training F-35 pilots in any close air support mission. In fact, the Air Force's most recent Ready Aircrew Program Tasking Memo, which tells commanders what missions pilots should be trained to do and how many training sorties that they need to do to be proficient in those missions. And it describes closed air support as a secondary mission that the F-35 pilots must merely be familiar with. In fact, for 2023 and 2024, no F-35 pilots are required to fly even a single closed air support training mission. You know, the A-10 is the only squadron that's dedicated to providing troops with close air support. The A-10s, with their 30mm cannon, allow it to attack targets within 100 meters of U.S. troops, much closer and more effective than any other aircraft. And the A-10s can not only just carry more weapons than any other Air Force plane, but they burn far less fuel than an F-16 or an F-35. And they can take off from small runways and even streets. I get why the Air Force wants to retire the old A-10s, but it sounds like they really don't have a good replacement yet. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. That was cool. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss climate change with Steve Gorman, the Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. Then we'll talk with Navy vet and author Mark Liebman about his book and some things that we Americans should be and aren't doing. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Truth, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Truth, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome a man I greatly admire. Steve Gorham is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and the author of four books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development, with over 100,000 copies in print. Steve's new book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, will be out August 1st. Steve, thank you for joining us today. This should be fun.
Hey, Dennis, great to join you.
Steve, how did you get involved in climate science? That's not something the average person grows up doing.
Well, back in 2008, I was just an out-of-work business executive and didn't want to move again to try and find a comparable job. Decided one morning, I can research, I can write books, started looking for topics. And actually, I got into the climate thing. I read all of former Vice President Al Gore's books and decided that the evidence didn't support what he was saying. And since then, I've written four books on climate, energy, sustainable development, public policy. And also, I'm a professional speaker. I speak to businesses around the country about and give them a little bit of a minority point of view that humans are not causing dangerous climate change. And the almost $1 trillion the world is spending every year to try and put renewables into place is not going to have a measurable effect on global temperatures.
You know, that sounds as weird as saying that there's a difference between men and women. I mean, that's not politically correct.
You know, no, it isn't. We have more than 190 heads of state now that profess to the theory of man-made warming, but the science and the economics do not support the fear. But you're right, it is the prevailing point of view.
You know, science has become a dirty word over the past couple, 3 years. We had so many so-called experts tell us what the science was dealing with us with COVID, and at least 90% of that had to be baloney. And I don't think we've yet had anybody admit that it was baloney. So science has sort of got a bad name from that. Not to say that science wasn't getting a bad name from all the global warming, global cooling, coming ice age. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I could tell it was baloney. I mean, how could the world not be changing all the time, climate-wise?
Well, that's right. It is. Unfortunately, there's tremendous amount of political pressure now to accept a prevailing view. And unfortunately, and just reading about it, that the political views that saying we have to be green, we have to put in all sorts of things have affected our U.S. military, and we'll talk about that a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just don't understand how intelligent people... I understand everybody... I'm sure I bought some stuff that wasn't true just because I decided to or it's consistent with something I'd heard before or whatever. But how can intelligent people who can do some research themselves, can read other people's research, how can they keep buying into this? Because, I mean, just the logical point of, please tell me how climate could ever not be changing.
Real question is, what is the cause of the change? And, from my point of view, the world jumped to a conclusion on this. We had a number of computer modelers in the 70s and 1980s who said that the Earth was warming and that humans were causing it, looking at carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And then we had the United Nations adopt this and some nations in Europe that wanted to be green, namely Germany and United Kingdom. And then we had a whole industry full of wind and solar and biofuels spring up. And now it also became the center of every environmental group, the center of their policy. And now the world has accepted this. But the evidence shows that we're not seeing dangerous warming. And the computer models are probably wrong. They're over forecasting things. Nevertheless, the world is plowing forward on this.
Well, yeah, apparently. I mean, I remember the coming ice age, and then we were going to lose all of the icebergs were going to melt, and we were going to the coast cities were going to be flooded. But I remember just very recently looking at a picture of the Statue of Liberty, the day it was dedicated, and sometime this year, and the water level's about the same.
So let me give you a few quick facts for your audience, since we don't have too much time here on the climate. First, temperatures have only risen about 1 degree Celsius in 140 years, 1.2 degrees Celsius since 1880. That's when we had the first thermometers. And it has been warmer many times over the past 10,000 years. 1,000 years ago, we had a medieval warm period. 2,000 years ago, when the Romans conquered the Mediterranean, it was warmer than today. So we've had multi-century-long periods in the last 10,000 years when it was warmer than today. Today's temperatures are not abnormally warm. Second, the greenhouse effect is what is blamed for dangerous warming. But when you break down the greenhouse effect, you find first that the greenhouse effect, the trapping of outgoing, by the way, the greenhouse effect is the trapping of outgoing infrared radiation from the surface of the Earth in gases. And then those are re-radiated, and that does tend to warm the surface of the Earth. And the proponents of the theory of man-made warming say our emissions from our industry are enhancing the greenhouse effect and causing us to warm. But when you break down the greenhouse effect, the first thing you learn is that the biggest greenhouse gases are not carbon dioxide. They're not methane. They're actually water vapor. Water vapor is Earth's dominant greenhouse gas. And then if you look at the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, you find that almost all of it is due to natural factors, CO2 coming out of the oceans and the biosphere. And every day our industries only put out about one part in 20 of the carbon dioxide that goes into the atmosphere. And so then if you roll this all together, you find that we're responsible for a very, very small part. And I mean, our industry is responsible for a very, very small part of the greenhouse effect. And then further, if you look at weather, you find that the storms are not more frequent. They're not more severe. We aren't getting more droughts and floods. Polar bear populations have tripled in the last 50 years. And so a lot of things you read in the press just flat out are not correct. Nevertheless, the Biden administration now has the U.S. Military marching to be green, to change their bases, their vehicles, their ships, and their planes to run green fuels at terrific cost. And it's going to degrade the capability of the military as well.
Yes, sir. We got to talk about that, too. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me. And even if we cleaned up to zero, if you look at what China and India and other third world nations are doing, would it even make a dent?
Well, you're right. The U.S. is about 13% of global emissions today, and that percentage is falling. There's about 1/7 of the world that is putting all these green programs into place. That's the U.S., Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the developed nations. The other 7/8 of the world is growing and emitting more and more carbon dioxide. And so regardless of what we do here in the U.S., global CO2 emissions are going to rise.
So here we are claiming we have this huge crisis, which has yet to manifest in any kind of way that anybody can see. And we're trying to change everything in our nation to preclude the crisis that other nations aren't doing. I think I've lost the logic here somewhere, Steve. is my brain working right?
Well, you're right. There's not a lot of common sense in this whole thing.
Well, you know, I've often said the uncommon thing about common sense is how uncommon it is. And I guess this is a really good example of that. Well, there's this misguided hunt for global energy renewal. That's goofy. We've touched that. Well, there's more to discuss about climate and especially its impact on our military, which Steve has already hinted to. That's what we're going to do next. Steve is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, twice this week. And then take a break with Say in the Area. I'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Steve Gorham, the Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. Okay, Steve, it's time to talk military. We've been told for years that our nation's biggest threat is our climate change. Biggest military threat is climate change, I think. Our Pentagon, as you've already pointed out, has said so repeatedly, and it appears they're looking at battery-run trucks and tanks and aircraft. And that, as you alluded to when we talked during the first segment, this makes no sense. The only purpose to have a military is to kill people and break things. If we're really good at it, nobody wants to mess with us. That's called deterrence. How does this make us in any way more combat ready?
Well, it doesn't. This has really been growing, as I understand it, since about 2010, and where it started in the U.S. Navy, and then in the last year, all of the branches of the service have set up green goals, if you will, or net zero goals. But back in 2009, the U.S. Navy announced plans to reduce the use of hydrocarbon fuels. By the way, the U.S. military is the largest institutional consumer of petroleum-derived fuel in the world. The U.S. Department of Defense consumes about 4.6 billion gallons of fuel each year, most of that for operational purposes, and the Navy uses about 1.6 billion gallons of that fuel. So in 2011, the U.S. Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, stated, quote, "By no later than 2020, at least half of all energy that the Navy uses, both afloat and ashore, will come from non-fossil fuel sources." And they set up a program they called the Great Green Fleet. And the basic idea here was to convert to biodiesel and do a blend of biofuels into diesel fuel. So they started in that in 2012. It was very expensive. Initially, they bought the biodiesel for about $27 a gallon.
Oh, good.
They got that down to about $14 a gallon, but the regular fuel is about $2 a gallon. And they did blend 10% of that, and they deployed a carrier task force in 2016 that was 90% diesel, 10% biodiesel. But these fleet efforts have been a dismal failure. Couldn't get this fuel around the world, so when they went to a port, you know, they had to carry the fuel with it or they had to use regular fuel. And by the end of 2017, the Navy had already spent $57 billion on green programs. And by the start of 2022, there were only, let's see, what are the numbers here? Today, if you don't count the carriers or other ships that have nuclear reactors in them, 99% of the Navy's fuel still comes from petroleum. So the green fleet has been a failure, but we spent $57 billion to try and make a conversion.
You know, if somebody wanted to do that, You can do research, you can make progress slowly, but you don't make it part of your force until it is fully functional and cost appropriate, right? Isn't that how science is supposed to work?
Yeah, I think the headlines say they're trying to go slow with this in a number of places, but they've all set up goals now. The Army wants to cut emissions by 50% by 2030, and they want to have, all non-combat vehicles in the Defense Department to be electric by 2035. These things are going to be very, very expensive. And again, not going to have the slightest effect on global temperatures.
Well, and also, they might be electric, but how do you recharge them? How do you
fuel
them up? I mean, I've been in combat on the ground, and I don't remember seeing a charging station.
There aren't any charging stations.
But I have carried gas cans, so I know how to do that.
Well, yeah, and they say they don't like having to transport fuel, but you really have no alternative on the battlefield. There's no other way to charge these things. The Air Force is another one. The Air Force is talking about using what they call sustainable aviation fuel, which is SAF, which is trying to be introduced in commercial airlines. Now, the commercial airlines use 200 billion. By 2050, we expect it's about 100 billion gallons a year now. It's going to be 200 billion gallons a year by 2050. And they want to use this SAF made from bio sources, or even they call it used cooking oil. The problem is there's not enough used cooking oil out there to power the commercial airlines. And then the military wants to use SAF as well to power jets. But, you know, again, this is another crazy thing. These fuels have to be drop-in because you want to do a blend or you want to have it work with existing aircraft. You don't want to have to replace your aircraft to run a different fuel. So they have to have exactly the same characteristics as regular jet fuel, which means the same energy density, thermal stability, viscosity, freezing point, flash points, all that sort of stuff. And so when you burn jet fuel, you emit 3.16 tons of carbon dioxide for each ton of fuel. And the reason that you have more than the fuel weight is that you're pulling two oxygen atoms from the air.
Sure.
And so you produce this carbon dioxide. Well, guess what? When you burn SAF, you also emit 3.16 tons of carbon dioxide for each ton of fuel. It's identical. And so you got to say, well, where's the savings? Oh, well, what I call it a life cycle hocus pocus. They say, well, it's the way we made this. It's the way we made this. We did this from used cooking oil. Well, today, 1 gallon of every 100 in the commercial airlines is SAF, and the other 99 are jet fuel A. And the Air Force is going to have the same problem. There isn't enough used cooking oil out there to do this. But, you know, they all have these programs and these plans, and it really is remarkable when we have so many issues with what's going on in Ukraine and fears about China and Taiwan. We're spending our time and tens of billions of dollars on this green stuff. Very, very unfortunate.
You know, this is crazy because you also haven't mentioned that we're in debt. We have a huge national debt, three times what it was in 2010, and we're doing this too? This is insane, isn't it? Am I missing something?
Yeah, it is. They're trying to cut down budgets and the military spending their precious budgets on something. Let me give you one more thing. We talk about electric vehicles. Diesel engines, the energy density of diesel fuel is 100 times the energy density of a battery. Now, electric engines are more efficient, but you still end up with a 20-to-1 power advantage for a diesel truck versus an electric battery vehicle. So what we're saying is, well, we don't need power on the battlefield. We don't need power in our trucks. We're going to reduce it by a factor of 20, the power that our fuel provides, so we can be green and sustainable. It is just crazy. I mean, the key on the battlefield is power, the speed, the endurance, how far you can drive, the ability to get, you know, across a muddy river, anything you're talking about. To go to electric combat vehicles is just one of the most foolish things that we've ever conceived. But by 2050, the Army says they want to have electric combat vehicles. This is going to have to change.
Here's hoping that somehow some common sense may come into this. We're about out of time, Steve. take a minute and tell us a little bit about the Climate Science Association of America. How can listeners plug in or learn more?
Well, I'm kind of an individual guy. I am executive director of that group, but I'm kind of a one-man band here. I speak and I write books, and they can go to my website, Steve Goreham, G-O-R-E-H-A-M.com, and contact me. I'd be happy to come speak to a group, or they can look at my book. The latest one, as you mentioned, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. That'll be out August 1st. It's going to be on Amazon. There will be ebooks as well. And learn the real story about what's going on with green energy and the climate and how it should not be used in our military.
Amen. And your books, I take it, are easy to read and they're to the point. How can listeners buy copies? Same way on your website?
Yeah, website, send them a signed one, or they'll be able to go to Amazon. The three previous books are on Amazon, and plus there's electronic books as well. So they really need to be educated, and because you're not getting the straight story in the headlines, unfortunately.
Amen. And folks, that's one of the big reasons I'm so pleased that Steve could join us. That information that he just shared and that is available in his books is something we need to know, because we're being governed by people that intentionally or otherwise are passing BS to us. Steve, thank you. Thank you for your incredibly insightful comments and for your service and love of our nation. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Great to join you, Denny.
We'll have to stay in touch, friend. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Navy vet Mark Liebman about our nation's challenges. Then we'll help World War II vet Al Johnson celebrate his 100th birthday and learn about his book. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.